Welcome to the 30th episode of Celluloid Tunes and the 10th international edition. Celluloid Tunes is the first and only webcast about film music in Norway, and my name is Tor Joachim Haga. Now, since this is a bit of an anniversary episode, both for the regular Norwegian programs and the international programs, we're going to celebrate by having a conversation with one of the world's leading film composers, namely George Fenton. In April 2015, Fenton visited Oslo for the film concert series The Blue Planet, based on the famous BBC documentary series from 2001. Over the course of 2 days, he conducted his own music with the Oslo Philharmonic and with special live projection of scenes from the series. It was in this context that we were able to sit down with the man himself for a 30-minute interview about his life and career. Now, Fenton has been one of the most prolific composers in Europe and in Hollywood over several decades, starting out in television in the 70s before moving on to such feature films as Gandhi, The Fisher King, Groundhog Day, Memphis Belle, Shadowlands, You've Got Mail, The Zero Theorem, and many more. And he has been nominated for an Oscar 4 times, and he has numerous BAFTAs, Golden Globes, Emmys, and other awards. So I asked Fenton about his beginnings in the early 70s, before he became such a successful composer, a time when he dabbled both in band management and even acting.
You know, like a lot of people in the 70s, I didn't have any direction at all. I'd studied music, learnt my music in the church. I played the organ, the church organ. I played the guitar pretty well. I had a band from about the age of 12. You know, I really was happy doing anything as long as it didn't involve getting a proper job in an office. So I'd wrote some songs for the band I was in. We made an album, an early album. And when we were looking for a publisher, I met this guy who worked at United Artists who wanted, and he said to me, why don't you start your own publishing company? Because, you know, and I said, because I don't know anything about it. And he said, well, I'll leave here and come and work with you. And he, because he was a business person, he did, and he had a lot of connections. So he ended up, more him than me, but me by default, as it were, doing record deals for people and managing, helping bands. We just helped people. Graham Field that wrote Rare Bird, that wrote Sympathy, you know, had a big hit in France, and we made a deal for them in France, and various other bands, new labels that started. It was a kind of fun time. And the acting thing was just a sort of complete mistake. It was just, they had an open audition, and my mother suggested that I go to this audition, and I would have liked to have been an actor. It was one of the things that I thought I would like to be, and I did get into one of the big drama schools in London, but by the time I got in, I was earning a living playing, you know, and so I just didn't go. But I did appear in this play
and film as well. And brilliant.
Yeah, well,
Private Road.
Well, yeah, but Private Road, you know, again, that was, I was in the film because, I'm trying to remember now, I was a friend of somebody who was in, going to be in the film, and again, you know, it was a kind of, we were sort of, it was quite a hippie-ish kind of setup, you know, so yeah, you know, I turned up in the film, and then I wrote the music for the film.
Through much of the 70s and early 80s, Fenton was a sought-after television composer in England, writing, among other things, the theme for the famous crime show Bergerac, which should be familiar to most Norwegian listeners, at least of a certain age. So, What did you learn from those years working in television?
I think what I grew up feeling about music was that it wasn't something precious, you know, that it was part of, you played it, it turned up. If I did things in the theatre or for television, I had a very sort of robust sense of music. And therefore, I was very happy with the role that music played. I think also, you know, the European films of that time, a lot of which were made for television, actually, were very much in the tradition of English cinema, for want of a better word, but it was a writer's medium. And when I went to America for the first time, but scored a film in Hollywood, I remember being struck by how film there was so much more a director's medium. When you were recording the music in Hollywood, nobody was too interested in the dialogue, you know. What they just said, just put, you know, you could put music anyway, you know, and that's always been the tradition. Mm. I think it's very different from the European tradition. But the other thing that was really great for me about that time was that, unlike now, when most people starting out now have nothing except a heap of gear, Sibelius, you know, and a project, then there was no gear equivalent. And we had a click track book, we had a, you know, paper and pencil. It meant that in the early days, it meant that I was, every single week, I was in a studio with musicians. I had to write things and they played them. And that was the only way to get music done. And even from quite young, I had that experience. And that experience was absolutely invaluable, because when you heard people play, particularly rhythm section players, you learnt so much every time they played. And so it was a wonderful thing. Now, you know, really what people learn in terms of their experience for their ears, what they learn is so much of it comes from samples. However good they are, and some of them are fantastically good and really useful, and I'm not eschewing them because I use them all the time, but they're not a substitute for a real life person.
Let's listen to an example of this early work. This is the main theme from the television series Jewel in the Crown from 1984, which was an historical miniseries about the final days of the British Raj in India during World War II. If you try to organize Fenton's work within certain categories or topics, it's perhaps possible to say that he's known for incorporating ethnic elements in an otherwise orchestral style, with examples such as Gandhi, Cry Freedom, Anna and the King, or in fact the BBC documentaries. So is this kind of ethnomusical research something that comes naturally to him?
And I owe quite a lot of my career to a musician who I first met when I worked with him in the theatre. He took me sort of under his wing. He was called John Leach, and he was a specialist in, as an ethnomusicologist, but he specialised in playing instruments that were hammered. Mm. So he famously played the cymbalom on the Ypres file. Mm-hmm. He did the first recording of the Harry Janosch. You know, he played for Stravinsky, etc., etc. But he also played the music because those dulcimers are particularly popular throughout the, not only Eastern Europe, but the Middle East and the Far East. And so when I studied with him and I began to collect guitar-like instruments, like from Persia, then Iran, you know, the tar, the setar. I didn't do anything from India because he didn't specialise in Indian music, but Chinese music, Middle Eastern music, Eastern European music. And we used to make, together, we used to do quite a lot of library albums of that sort of stuff. And so I became very, very comfortable with the use of it and the sort of exotic use of it. And I was always so grateful when I got a film, you know, that has that element, that without it being like a travelogue, you know, or something, but you could use colours in that way. And so I am quite comfortable with it, yeah.
For an example of this aspect of Fenton's music, let's play a cue from the gorgeous, lush score for Anna and the King, based on the diaries of Anna Lenowens, who served as teacher for the wives and children of King Mongkut of Siam, or Thailand as it's known today, in the late 19th century. Now, this story has been adapted multiple times, among others, a film version from 1946 with a fantastic score by Bernard Herrmann, as well as the famous musical The King and I by Rodgers and Hammerstein. But this version is from 1999, directed by Andy Tennant and with Jodie Foster and Chow Yun-fat in the leading roles. And on display here is Fenton's fantastic grasp of combining Eastern and Western modes of composition in a sort of seamless blend. So these are the tracks Meeting the Children and Letter of the Week from Anna and the King. Thank you. Another aspect of George Fenton's scores is that he often works around source cues and existing music. It can be jazz and popular music like in Groundhog Day, 84 Charing Cross Road, Shadowlands, Memphis Belle, Ken Loach movies, or even classical music like in Dangerous Liaisons and Madness of King George. And often he has to work his way organically in and out of this existing material. How does he perceive this particular process?
I know that for some people, they're so centred about what they write that they don't really probably particularly enjoy having to work within the context of that other music, you know. But for me, I find it, A, fascinating, but really, B, really rewarding. Even in something like You've Got Mail, you know, because I knew Harry Nilsson quite well, and he wrote these great songs. And so when Nora said, well, I'm going to use all these Nilsson songs, I was great, because it meant that I could kind of write, in a way, write a score like Harry would have written if he'd written the score as well, you know. And for me, that's a tremendous pleasure, because I find it quite liberating as opposed to constraining. I find once I'm comfortable with the world of the music I'm writing in, then I feel quite free to write, even with Handel, you know. I mean, even there, it didn't bother me after a while to rewrite sections of his music and take out cadences, you know, to stop it kind of shutting down all the time. And I felt quite free with it. So I've always liked that.
For an example of this, let's listen to a track from Stephen Frears' Dangerous Liaisons from 1988, starring Glenn Close and John Malkovich in an adaptation of the 1782 novel Les Liaisons Dangereuses by Pierre Chaudalon de Laclos, about two rich and bored aristocrats in Rococo France that conjure up sexual intrigues with other members of the aristocracy. Now, in this film, Fenton has to exist alongside music by Handel and Vivaldi and Bach, among others. And so it has to shift between pastiche and a more contemporary sense of drama. This is the track Main Titles and The Dressing, which combines Fenton's original music with Vivaldi's La Cetra, Opus 9.
Thank you.
Fenton has had long relationships with some of the leading directors of the last 40 years. Among them is the late Richard Attenborough, not only a celebrated actor, but also a renowned director. Fenton and Attenborough collaborated on 5 films in total: Gandhi, In Love and War, Shadowlands, Cry Freedom, and Grey Owl. These scores are ripe with melody and melodrama, presumably a composer's dream. So, did Fenton basically get to do whatever he wanted in this collaboration?
He loved music, first of all. He was very inclusive, and so he would make me part of the filmmaking process. And one of the things that had the great effect of, I think, because I was quite young when I started with him and very insecure, you know, about myself. And one of the things that did was to give me great feeling of security. And I think if you feel very secure, you tend to expand more, you know, what you have to say or write. And he was amazing in that way. He never wanted particularly to listen to anything. He wanted me to do what I wanted. I mean, he would spot very specifically, you know. It drove me mad because he would never put, like in Gandhi, you know, I was desperate for him to let me play something at the front of the film. But he wouldn't, and it meant that, you know, that if you don't play, once you've played the front title of a film, you know, it's kind of you're up and running. Yeah. If you delay the first music cue, you know, the kind of the pressure on the cue becomes bigger and bigger. But apart from that, he was very specific about where the music, and he didn't use a lot of music necessarily, but what he liked was to know that I was okay, that I was writing it and thing like that, and then he would come to the studio and the orchestra would play. And that's how it went. And it was a great, great, fantastic thing for me. And, you know, and I mean, occasionally, like in Shadowlands, I had to write something before he shot the film, the two anthems that I wrote. But apart from that, he was great and a great champion and wonderful to me.
Let's listen to a cue from Cry Freedom, the 1987 film depicting apartheid in South Africa. For this film, Fenton collaborated with the South African jazz composer, Jonas Gwangwa, and as such is another example of his ability to incorporate ethnic elements in a more Western idiom. This is the cue Crossroads, a dawn raid. Director Ken Loach is another long-time collaborator, having done 15 films together since the early 90s. And in many ways, he is the opposite of Richard Attenborough, relying on the social, realist style, often with lots of dialogue and a very strong political stance. Is there any room for music in this kind of expression?
He's very musical, Ken. It's amazing. And he listens to everything in detail, everything I write. Before we get there, he listens to everything like that. But sometimes he'll say, oh, I think just we just need a note. You know, you should just play a note of some sort. I said, what do you mean, literally? He said, yes. Because what he doesn't like is he doesn't ever want music to take the film to a place where the film is perceived as being an artifice. And I think that that documentary sort of way of working that he has, I found it very difficult sometimes, because you keep thinking, well, I would do more. And you try, and he doesn't want that. Again, you know, he's given me some fantastic opportunities. And it's quite interesting how when I take the music away from the film, his music, and I put it into some form where I, like, play it, like here. Or like last week it was played on the South. They played something from Land and Freedom on the South Bank. Actually, it sounds like a huge piece of music, suddenly. Because, you know, when you put it together and edit it like a piece of music, there is a musical language going on. It's just that it's very sparse and austere in the way that he uses it.
Let's play a cue from The Wind That Shakes the Barley from 2006, a war film depicting the Irish War of Independence and the Irish Civil War in the early 20th century. This is the hypnotic string-driven title cue from the film. A relationship that didn't quite end as well is that of Neil Jordan. After successful collaborations on The Company of Wolves, We Are No Angels, and High Spirits, things came to a halt with the film Interview with a Vampire in 1994, when Fenton's score was tossed out in favour of one by Elliot Goldenthal, who then became Jordan's regular composer. How did Fenton experience this rather controversial sequence of events?
They had a film, was a very dark, it was very dark, the film, and when they tested it first, it was very long. It didn't score very well. And there was a bit of a panic, and so there was a lot of recutting, and during that time I wrote some music, and it tested a little better. And then I recorded the score, and they tested the film with the score, and it tested incredibly well. But I think by the time it had tested incredibly well, some people involved in the film had already decided that it needed to sort of maybe move in a different direction or something, I don't know. And so after this test screening, which scored like really highly, they just called me up and said, you know, the test screening was brilliant, but actually they're taking your music off the film. I was like, okay, well, I don't know anything. So they did. You know, obviously it's very, very painful when that happens, because you put a lot of yourself into it. And also there was a relationship that I had with the filmmaker, which then, of course, was completely compromised. So, which was a shame as well. As it happened, the score was replaced by Elliot Goldenthal. And Elliot Goldenthal is a fantastically gifted composer. I mean, I have the greatest admiration for him. And as a result of that happening, Elliot then did several of Neil Jordan's films. And I think of all the, you know, outcomes for him, for Neil, that wasn't a bad outcome. It's fine. And it propelled me into the world of romantic comedies.
Exactly.
which was a very, very weird place to go from there, because that was the darkest score that has probably ever been written for a film. Mm. You know, I said, like, it was so dark.
Let's play something from Jordan and Fenton's 1988 film, High Spirits, a burlesque comedy about a castle in Ireland and the owner's desperate attempt to keep the building by creating a tourist attraction that revolves around ghosts and spirits that eventually turn out to be more real than they bargain for. Lots of stars in this film, Peter O'Toole, Steve Guttenberg, Daryl Hannah, a young Liam Neeson, and a very fun score by Fenton, who taps into Irish folk music and jigs, especially in this opening main title theme. Thank you. Now, beyond the risk of rejection, as exemplified with the Neil Jordan story, what is Fenton's take on contemporary trends, especially the ostinato-driven scores of action films, for example? What is it like to be a more traditionally inclined composer in such a landscape?
The simplicity of how films were put together and financed is not the same. It just is different. It's a different world now. And therefore, because so many more parties are involved, you know, and so the dynamic is so different. The marketing department, you know, when I first began to write scores, nobody was particularly interested in what the marketing department thought. People made films and then they gave them to them to market. Mm. Now they tell them what they want. You know, it's the door swings so much more both ways now, in every direction, with producers, with financiers, you know, with marketing, with other interests within the same group, because the companies are controlling all media, you know. And I think that inevitably has changed the prescriptiveness of what people want the score to be like, because mm-hmm. they want it to be that kind of thing that they know, and they know it worked last time, it will work this time. Yeah.
Still, Fenton has proven his versatility on many occasions in the past, and even displayed his skill in writing electronic music for Terry Gilliam's latest film, The Zero Theorem.
For example, in The Zero Theorem, you have electronic, a couple of electronic tracks.
Yes.
Joe Biss or something. And that's not something that you usually associate with George Fenton.
No, no.
Electronic music.
No.
I don't know if you've done it in the past, but it shows that you have that ability as well, so...
I'm happy to do it, and I like doing it. I think that there are things that I need to learn about it. You know, I think that there's a dynamic sense in me musically that I need to kind of put to one side if I do that kind of thing. The whole thing about orchestral writing is the ebb and flow, the change, and the huge dynamic range that you employ all the time. And so you kind of, in a way, when you conceive or write, you write thinking that way, which, of course, is not really what you want when you're doing Spider-Man.
Let's listen to the cue Jobis Part 1 from The Zero Theorem from 2014. Finally, this brings us to the reason for Fenton's visits in Oslo, the Blue Planet concert based on the BBC documentary. Although he has explored his fair share of genres over the years, Isn't this series really sort of a hodgepodge of genres in itself? A sort of multitude of stories and styles describing the life of the planets and animals?
I think it's quite a recent thing in the documentaries, in the sense that they are so much more sophisticated now about how they can film, and therefore they can film stories so that you can apply the music to the story with the same opportunity for narrative and drama, etc., 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 that you can with a score. And obviously there are differences, but perhaps there aren't as many differences now as there are similarities. And so I really enjoy doing them. This is a little different because this is a kind of a concert of the music, and I recut quite a lot of footage in order to be able to play the pieces, but also to be able to play the film without anybody speaking. And that involves quite a bit of work, actually, to do. But you know, I really love doing it. And I do enjoy doing the documentaries. But, you know, I don't know if I'm an impatient person or what, but, you know, I get to a point with comedies. You know, I don't have anything else to say. And I sort of got to that point with Polar Bears as well. I just didn't have anything else to write for a polar bear.
This is the opening theme from the series and from the soundtrack album of The Blue Planet, released in 2001. Finally, we have to ask the eternal question, what current or future projects is he working on right now? Will he continue with the documentaries, or do we have more feature films to look forward to?
I did a new film for Andy Tennant at the end of the year, which they've just finished mixing. I then did a film for Terry Jones, The Python. He's made a film with Simon Pegg, which I've scored. a month ago, and I've just finished. Nicholas Heitner, who runs the National Theatre in England, has just left the National Theatre, and he has made a film of an Alan Bennett story, which I've just scored on Monday and Tuesday this week in London.
This week.
Yeah. So it's been really good. Mm. And now I've got a bit of a break. And I wrote the score for a film called Mrs. Henderson Presents in, I think, 2005 or something.
Yeah, that's Stephen Frears.
Yes, Stephen directed it. And I've written a musical of it. So that's going on in England in August. So that's what I'm doing next.
And that marks the end of our conversation with George Fenton, one of my personal heroes in the film music world and certainly a composer who has made his mark in a wide range of films and for a wide range of directors over the years. I hope you've enjoyed this International Anniversary edition. Feel free to share it in your social media or leave comments in the field below, perhaps your own George Fenton favourites. We'll be back shortly with another episode, most likely in Norwegian. Until then, I wish you all happy listening.